All right, buddy, I'm Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober, and my home group is a Design for Living group in Neptune, New Jersey, on the Jersey Shore in New Jersey. And for you young people, that's the real Jersey Shore. And just to throw a little bit in, New Jersey, the home of the Big Book. Yeah, you're not going to like me by the end of this. And you guys missed it. I had an unbelievable talk at 2:30 in the morning. As I looked at the ceiling, I had the first 10 rows crying. I had the middle of the pack. The women wanted to be in the next chapter, three wives with me. And all you young guys in the back, you wanted me to sponsor you. But I'll tell you, I was a little bit nervous. And then God did what God always does. I came up here and I saw Morgan. And he doesn't know this, but I know this. Morgan's a past delegate out of Maryland. And a bunch of years back, when I was a GSR, rotated into a DCM, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I went to a NARASA, which is a Northeast Regional AA Service Assembly. And I went to a DCM workshop, and he was the moderator. And I was afraid, because I, you know, a tough guy like me doesn't know what I'm doing. And this gentleman next to me calmed us so unbelievably and gave us such an unbelievable weekend to teach us what we do. One drunk helping another. And, you know, I guess God said if it worked back then, let's bring Morgan back and put him next to Jimmy today. So I really appreciate you. Really appreciate you being here. And it's funny how I got asked to speak this. You know, when I first went through the book, one of the first things that that happened to me was that I got invited to a conference, or not a conference, like a Big Book weekend. And it was these two guys I never heard of by the name of Joe and Charlie. And that's right. And, you know, I'm sure like most of you guys who have seen those guys, you know, I came back from that thing. I was lit up like a Christmas tree. I mean, I was forcing this book down everyone's throat, you know. And for years after that, we were doing Big Book workshops at houses and churches, wherever we can. We would bring a boombox and cassette tapes and all that. And for you new people, that's a question you could ask your sponsor. What's a boombox and cassettes? And then we didn't do that for a while. And my home group started. We have a Big Book study group on the Jersey Shore. 250 to 300 people every Sunday night sitting down going through this book. It's a blessing. So thank you, Joe, Charlie, and God for me being here, because this is a true honor and a privilege to be part of this deal, to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous. This was the question I was faced with. How long can you hold your breath? How long can you be in a fellowship, a 12-step fellowship, and not work the 12 steps? And apparently I was 5 years sober at the time when that question was posed to me. 5 years dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. 5 years suffering from something that I didn't even know I was suffering from or understand that I was suffering from. I was stark raving sober. And I'm dying of this thing called untreated alcoholism that no one ever explained nor ever talked to, and I wasn't asking questions. And here I am. I'm 5 years separated from my last drink. I'm doing everything that we do in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm making coffee, picking up chairs, breaking down chairs, ashtrays back in those days, all the stuff that we do as a fellowship, as home groups. And I'm too afraid to raise my hand and tell you that I'm really dying in here. My pride and my ego wanted me dead. You know, and so here I am. I'm 5 years separated, and a man from St. Paul, Minnesota walks into my life. I'm giving a talk on the second step. I don't have a relationship with God because I suffer from this other thing called pride. And see, my pride is I'm attached to what everyone in this room is thinking of me right this moment. You know, I'm really concerned how you feel about me. I don't know where this stuff comes from, but it comes. And I suffer from it. So here I am. I'm giving a talk on the second step. I have no relationship with God, but I'm lying to every one of you because I want you to like me. So I read the 12 and 12. I could throw out a couple of lines. I could tell you a couple of jokes, and, you know, that's good to go. At the end of the meeting, a man walks up to me, and I go to shake his hand, but he doesn't shake my hand. He looks at me eyeball to eyeball, and he says to me, "You're screwed." In a little saltier language. Now, again, new people, that's called AA love. And that's what I found out on that day. You know, like Morgan said, I served Area 44, Northern Jersey, as the area coordinator and the alternate chair. And there's another book that I read, and it's a book that, you know, not many people read. It's called The Service Manual. Well, one of the greatest talks in that service manual is an excerpt from this guy who was a Class A trustee, Bernard Smith. And we talk about this a lot lately because the conference just happened. And in that story, or that in that little speech that he gave, and I'll paraphrase because I know I'll screw it up, because I feel like a fish in the ocean of all you sharks. So I'm not going to quote a page and I'm not going to say a line because I know you'll be after me. But in that little talk, what he says is that, you know, why do we have a conference? Why do we do the things we do? It's not to ensure our sobriety. There's 60, 70,000 strong here. We're here. We do this to ensure the sobriety or the recovery of the alcoholic who still stumbles through the night right now, one short block away from this room. For the child who was born this morning, tonight, destined for alcoholism. And he goes on later on to say, for alcoholics in the years ahead, that they can come to AA and find the rebirth that we have found. And see, for me, that rebirth didn't start till I was 5 years sober. That rebirth didn't happen until I bottomed out completely. I had what we call, I guess in New Jersey, maybe you call it in Oklahoma or Texas or California, wherever, I had that second bottom. I had that third bottom without a drink in my system. I found out that if my drinking doesn't kill me, my selfishness and my self-centeredness will make no mistake about it. But see, at 5 years of sobriety, to the untrained eye, it looks like normal living is the solution to my alcoholism. Because am I not the one who put this family together or reassembled this family that I walked out on because of my drinking? Am I not the person who got the great job, got the great car, had the beautiful house, had money in my pocket? Am I not that guy? But here I am, and normal living is not the solution to my alcoholism. So when I read that thing about rebirth, and I'm dying in AA, what I come to realize is that 4 years after that talk, a child was born destined for alcoholism. On February 26, 1958, I was born perfect, and I was quickly handed over to these two character defects called Mom and Dad. And little did I know that day what happened was that a book was written 19 years earlier, not too far away from my home. A book was written exactly 7 miles away from my front door that my parents carried me over that morning. A book that was written in 17 William Street in Newark, New Jersey. A book that was going to save my life countless times throughout the years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, I picked up my first drink. I was around 13 years old. I saw a lot of the icky pods running around like lunatics all weekend so far, and I think I started a little late. But at 13 years old, I pick up my first drink, and I'm drinking Colt 45 and blackberry brandy. And I love the effect produced by alcohol. And, you know, I'm not going to go to a drunk alone because we don't have that kind of time. But what alcohol did for me on that day as a 13-year-old, it took me out of me. And how many podiums have I heard that from? It quieted that, I don't even know what you call it, that. It quieted down within me. And by the time I'm 18 years old, I'm a daily drinker. By the time I'm 19 years old, I'm a daily drinker. By the time I'm 20 years old, I'm a daily drinker. And I'm not drinking to get loaded. I'm not drinking to get drunk every day. What I'm doing is I'm drinking to escape the hopelessness and futility of my life as I've been living it. Because by the time I'm 18, 19, 20 years old, I can't hold a job. I've already been thrown out of college. I have no trade. I can't be in honest relationships. I don't know how to communicate with people. I mean, my life's going down a toilet, but you know, I'm that perfect little child that was born. And guess what? When you're perfect, it's always your fault. I can never take stock honestly. I can never look in the mirror and see what's going on with me. It has to be your fault why I feel the way I feel deep down within. And see, I'll always try to build up a big outside external thing like I did. But see, I didn't know that alcoholism resides within. And it wasn't until I sat down and go through this book. So by the time I'm 28 years old, I'm just an everyday garden variety, alcoholic, drunk, loser. Arrested many times, in trouble many times. You know the story, on and on and on. And I do the absurd, incredibly tragic things while drinking, like our literature talks about. Any chameleons in here? And for those who don't know what a chameleon is, does anyone ever pretend to be someone they're not? Well, that's me, because God forbid I be who I am. God forbid to thy own self be true, because I don't know how to do that kind of stuff. So I do things that are absolutely crazy, so I fit in, so you like me. And I do things like on St. Paddy's Day one year, you know, I take out paint. And I don't take out the kind of paint that you young kids do, where you take a shower and the paint comes right off. I make a decision to do really, well, absurd things, ideas that day. One was, and believe me, I understand our primary purpose, but I drop a hit of acid. The other thing was, I go down to Dad's basement and I find a can of 1950 green paint that's like lead-based. And I decide to paint myself green. So I fit in. And so here I am about 3 months later, still halfway green. The turpentine is working a little bit. And I'll never forget, I went back to the bar and some lady with an Irish brogue said to me, "Oh, Jimmy, you must be so proud of your Irish heritage." And I looked at her, I said, "I'm Polish and Hungarian. What are you talking about?" See, I'll be whoever you want me to be. By the time I'm 29 years old, I'm dying. And what happens is I walk in a bar one day, and I walk into the bar, and these two men said to me, "Jimmy, you need to go to Newark Airport. They're hiring guys like you." And I go to Newark Airport, and guess what happens? I walk into a room that's about a quarter of the size of this room, and I'm shaking, I'm baking, and I'm dying of this thing called alcoholism, which I don't even know what it is because it's all your fault. And I sit down, next to a man I never met before. We'll call him Stranger. And Stranger says to me, "What's your problem?" For whatever reason, I spit up my life story in about 10 minutes on this guy, and he says, "I have the answer for you." I said, "What's that?" He goes, "Is it possible for you not to pick up a drink this rest of this day?" I said, "I have no idea." He asked me where I was living, and I told him I was staying at this apartment. He goes, "Be outside without a drink at 7 o'clock tonight." And what happened was, but for God's grace, I didn't drink, and I was outside. And what happened was this car came by, a stranger filled with a car of other strangers. And they said, probably one of the most important things you'll ever hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. They looked at me and said, "Get in the car." They took me around the corner, and they took me to my grammar school, which for years I thought it was bingo, but it was an AA meeting. And they walked me in, and you know what happened? I met you people, and you people did what you always do. You lived up to your responsibility that when someone needs AA, I can't say it because I'm like going fast here. And, you know, but you guys, you pulled me aboard and you brought me in, and I got involved in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Fast forward, I'm dying of AA. I'm dying of sobriety. I'm dying of untreated alcoholism at 5 years sobriety. And I give this talk, and this guy comes up to me, and what happens is he invites me over to his house the next day. And he says something that was so like, what? Now, some of you people might not believe this. He said, "Where's your big book?" 5 years separated from a drink, active in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my reply was to him, "What's a big book?" I know some of you come from neighborhoods like that. Or meetings like that. And what happened was this man carried a message of depth and weight, and he was on with the facts. And he did what every salesman does. He sold me on the first step because he painted me so far into the corner. I only had one choice to make out of those two alternatives, that I need spiritual help. And as I went through the work, my life drastically changed, a profound alteration, as the literature talks about. And I started to do these principles, and I started to try to practice these principles in all my affairs, in my home, occupation, in my affairs. And what happened was my life got glorious. And at 5 years, 6 years of sobriety, my life was going somewhere. But then, and as I sponsor many men, then happens, I fell prey to the biggest trap in Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell prey to comfortability. And all of a sudden, overtime was more important than that meeting. Being a Little League coach, and I'm not knocking that, was more important to doing step work with a sponsee. All of a sudden, all that external stuff became important. And guess what? Over the 5 to 10 year period, I fell right back into that dying of untreated alcoholism with a profound spiritual experience at year 5. And what happened was, well, guys like me, you know, again, you know, like the book says, I'll build a structure up for myself and my family, and I'll tear it down with a senseless theories or sprees. And I didn't drink, but guess what I did? I walked out on that wife that I got back with, and it was two little AA babies who were 8 and 5 at that time. I'm sober 10 years now, and I'm out of my mind sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, 10 years sober, and I'm crazy. So what do? I run into the arms of a woman in AA, and the one who understands, right? And I fell for this woman, and nothing against her. I mean, she was the tornado walked right into her life. And what I brought with me was alcoholism. And within 5 years of that relationship, I blew that whole relationship up because that relationship was built on dishonesty, on fear, on guilt, on remorse, on shame, all these things that were back right inside me again. And at 10 years sobriety, I found myself in a bar. At 10 years, I ordered a drink because I was so restless, irritable, and discontent. At 10 years, I couldn't tell you right from wrong or anything. I was so lost again on another bottom, another surrender in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when the bartender put the drink on the bar and I looked at it, the devil and the angel showed up. One said, drink it. The other one saying, not drink it. And all of a sudden, here comes a hand around that glass and it pulls that drink away. And I look up and it's one of us who just happens to be a bartender. And he said, what are you doing in here? And I said, well, I'm just having a nice day, you know. And thought it'd be a good day to throw 10 years of sobriety away. And what happened was, you know, it's how dark it is before the dawn. Because what happened was a couple of days later, I wound up going to a big book workshop that my future sponsor was given. And this man named Peter Wren was given his workshop. And I sat down with him and I wanted what he had. And I grabbed him after the meeting and I told him I need help. And like any good alcoholic member of Alcoholics Anonymous, what he did was he put his hand out and he pulled me on that lifeboat. And he took me through this work again. And I started to understand when you people say the onion needs to be peeled further and further, I needed to go deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, Peter, I just changed sponsors and we were good friends and we still are good friends. We're like brothers. But you know what? I needed a new voice in my head. And my new sponsor, Bob B. from St. Paul, Minnesota, says this all the time. The book's not the treasure. The book's the map. And the treasure is a spiritual experience, a relationship with God. And what Peter did for me, what a lot of men do for me, and a lot of friends that I see right now in this audience, what you guys do for me is you put that map out. And you hold my hand and you take me on a journey through that book. And I take those actions and all of a sudden my life starts to change. And all of a sudden, one of the most unbelievable things I found out about the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is this, that the power of the book is it's going to meet you where you're at no matter where you're at. So whether you're 30 days sober or whether you're 30 weeks sober or 30 years sober, the book's going to meet you where you're at. And the book met me right where I was at that day, dying of untreated alcoholism, sober a long time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to get back on the bike. And as we tell our little kids, when they fall off the bike, get back on the bike. And I had to start pedaling back to God. And the book has been the map that has brought me there. And as a result of that, I get to sit with other men at my kitchen table. And as a result of that, I see the lights get turned on for them. And my experience is, you know, I've used this book as a weapon. You know, we get all jazzed up, we get all fired up, and all of a sudden we want to shove this down everyone's throat. And my experience is that doesn't work. That's not very effective. Let your feet show the man behind you how this deal works. That's what I was taught. Sober feet. Don't tell me how sober you are or how grateful you are. Show me how grateful you are. And this book has opened my life to relationships. This book has opened up things I can't even imagine. Involved in service. I'm never doing service. That's politics, right? But here I am, the area alternate chair and sitting in meetings and, you know, what I found out about doing the book, every aspect of my life, there's actions that I could take and incorporate and take it out into the world. Whether it's my relationship with my wife of today, or my children, or my ex-wife, whatever it is, whether I have a resentment, whether I have fear, whatever it is, it's in that book. And all I have to be willing to do is take those actions. And when I do, I stand here tonight, or this morning, happy, joyous, and free. And that rebirth has happened, and it could happen for anyone in this room. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jimmy. I am currently serving as their area archivist. And recently I was reading some stuff that Bill was talking about. And our topic today is the big book, Our Shared Experience. And in this talk I was reading, or this article piece I was reading that Bill was talking about, he said when he was writing the book, he said when he shared the chapter by chapter, sent it around to the various groups, everything was going fine through the first four chapters. But then he passed out the fifth chapter, and he said he felt like he should be a referee. He was no longer sharing his experience, but he was refereeing. But the thing that grew out of that, and Marilyn, we can claim fame to this character, Jimmy B, the vicious cycle, he gave us some things that opened the doors for many of us, God as we understand him. And so that's why I'm here today, because of him. Our next speaker prefers to be called Bucky M from Minnesota. Yeah. The sobriety date, if I can read, June 15th, 1981. And those of you who have court slips, he's not taking names, but he is a DWI court person working with the area. I'll let you tell him all about it.
Good morning. I'm Bucky, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been outed. I have a sobriety date of June 15th, 1981. My sobriety truly began probably 17 years later. Jimmy, I don't know that I can say it as well as Jimmy, but Jimmy told my story, because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous not because I was interested in a new spiritual experience, or I wasn't, you know, as I've learned, I wasn't on a winning streak. You know, wake up one morning and say, gee, everything's going great and it'll even be better if I go to AA. That didn't happen. My wife looked at me and said, I got to do something about my father's drinking or I will go crazy. And I'm sitting there thinking, life was going fine. Why do you want to mess this up? But I ended up, because I was afraid, and at that time I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism too much, I ended up starting a journey that has changed my life and has given me gifts that I never understood I wanted. I grew up in a very normal alcoholic home. Dad drank, mom got mad, kids ran for cover. That's just my experience. So alcoholism was normal in my upbringing. So when the day came and my first wife looked at me and said, I've got to do something about my father's drinking, and my father-in-law happened to be the one person I feared most in my life, I thought, this is quite a dilemma. But I ended up in a place where they taught about intervention, and I had never even heard the word before at that moment. But they started to describe alcoholism. And as we drove home from that session, my wife turned to me, and we had seen a movie. And this movie was a very vivid description of an alcoholic family. And in this particular movie, the wife was the alcoholic, and the husband was doing the Al-Anon dance, you know, keeping things undercover or whatever, and the kids were just kind of cowering in the corner. And as we drove home, I was thinking it looked pretty normal to me. And she looked at me and said, I see myself in every single role in that movie, including the alcoholic. And I thought, oh boy, this is not according to my script. 2 days later, we're at a treatment center. I'm there for a second opinion. She's there to check in. That's how well we're communicating. And as I'm driving home that day, I knew that my life had changed forever. During that whole episode, now, you have to understand, alcohol was just part of life. I mean, how do you go to parties and have fun without alcohol? How do you go to a ball game without alcohol? How do you have a birthday, Christmas, Easter? how do you greet the weekend without alcohol? But it wasn't a problem till now, and she made it. So I like to say that my program started with, you know, have a problem with alcohol and my wife is uncontrollable and what do I do now? A gentleman by the name of Wes. I've never seen Wes before or after, but on that given day, Wes was given the evaluations. And while she's in treatment, I'm getting an evaluation. I'm answering the questions, and Wes says at the end of it, "Bucky, I'm not really sure whether you're an alcoholic or not, but there's little doubt that you're a mess. Why don't you try Al-Anon? And if you don't feel better in a while..." And he didn't describe what a while was. "Why don't you try AA? So I quit drinking. Because I could. And I was miserable. There was nothing fun about not drinking. I don't think there's anything funny about going to a meeting and not drinking. And I was at a meeting where Al-Anon was at one end of the hall and the AAs were at the other. There are two people here who were at that meeting. And I'm listening to the laughter at the other end of the hall. And I heard Wes's words. And Wes's words were, if you don't feel better after a while, and it had been months, maybe you want to try AA. And I started my journey. During that treatment experience, a little guy by the name of Eddie S. had 12-stepped me, and I didn't even know he was doing it at the time. Eddie was sitting in front of the meeting, and he was in a dress in a three-piece suit, and he was describing how he'd gotten sober on the running boards of the Salvation Army truck in Boston, Massachusetts, and today he was standing in front of us, the executive vice president of a Fortune 500 company, and I said, "I want what he's got." And the truth of the matter is, I had no clue what Eddie had. I saw the trappings. That was what was going to make me happy. And that's what I pursued. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to go. I went to this meeting where Eddie said he would be. It had been months since I had seen Eddie. And sure enough, he was there at the door, shaking hands and welcoming people and saying, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad you're here." And he meant it. And that was my first taste of the integrity of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This guy had said what he would do, and then he did what he said. He saved my life. Now, that was a great meeting for fellowship. It was a step meeting. We had a meeting on the step every week, and in fact, during those first few years, several times I was asked, "Bucky, would you take a step?" And I'd say, "Absolutely. I'm a college guy. I can read. I can learn. I can give you a book report." And that is exactly what I did. Unfortunately, nobody corrected me. I had been very careful. After all, I wasn't as bad as some of those other guys. I hadn't had any DWIs. Hadn't lost a job, hadn't lost a house. My family was still intact on paper. So I probably didn't need all 12 steps. Three or four ought to be enough. And I could tell you exactly what you should do on each and every one of those steps. And nobody told me or confronted me about the subtle misunderstanding I was spewing from the podium. And the fact of the matter is that I was trying to learn the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, having never done the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sober, I was dry on our fellowship. And God bless that. But as Jimmy described, the disease is still there waiting for us. And it continued to grow. And without taking a drink, my bottom was still approaching. Over the next 15 years, My professional career seemed to blossom, as did my debts, my confusion, my fears. And in 1999, God said, enough. He gave me a heart attack at age 47. And I had two very good friends in Alcoholics Anonymous who I had just told about the debts. I had just told them about the turmoil in my marriage. And they were angry initially because I hadn't been honest with them. But they showed up at my hospital room and said, Bucky, we have no interest in being at your funeral. You have to do something. You have to do something now. And one of them suggested a big book study in action that had started, and I think very much came out of the Joe and Charlie movement, if you will, of taking the big book and studying it hard and looking at what it really says and sharing our experience. And they said, Bucky, we know of a group, and they go through the big book over 15 weeks and they give it everything they've got, and you try to do the steps as the first 100 did as you go through the book. And I said, I'll try anything. And that began the journey with the book. See, I had always owned a big book. I had always owned several big books because I'm sure that would impress you. I had little ones, big ones, little in-between ones. I'd hand them out to people. I had read them, much the same as any other novel I had on my bookshelf. But I had never really studied the big book, and I did study the big book with that big book study in action. And I got a sponsor who had done the same with his sponsor. That was key. Up to that point, sponsorship was, you know what, I got a guy, he's got my phone number, I've got his. If I ever need him, I'll call him. Get off my back. And all of a sudden, that wasn't the name of the game anymore. And this sponsor said, here's how we're going to do this. And he went to this big book study with me. And we went through the book and we went through the steps. And I did the steps the way the book says to do the steps. And the magic happened. I didn't understand what a spiritual experience was until I came to the end of 9 steps, doing amends, and finding out that I no longer viewed the world the same way I did a few years ago. I no longer viewed my relationship to my family the same way I had in the past. I no longer viewed my role in the world as it had been in the past. I had been taught, it had been suggested that I try to be helpful wherever I go. What a concept. What a concept. All of a sudden, I'm going to 5-6 meetings a week. My marriage isn't getting any better because my wife has decided that, oh, that treatment, that probably was over. That was overkill. I'm really not an alcoholic. And our paths diverted. In Thanksgiving of 2000, I asked my wife for a divorce. And 3 days later, her best friend is calling me at my office saying, have you seen her? And we've been separated for about 2 months at the time. And I said, well, you know, she's probably at the casino or something. Very cavalier about it. And a few hours later, they called back to say that she'd committed suicide. Now, this book does not tell you how to deal with suicide. But I can tell you this. Within 20 minutes of making the phone call to those two guys who had intervened on me when I was stone cold sober, I was surrounded by members of Alcoholics Anonymous. That they were living what this book talks about. Since that time, people tapped me on the shoulder and said, well, Bucky, maybe you can be of service, because finally I was showing up. And they didn't initially trust me to teach this. They said, but you can collect money in the Pink Can Plan and send books out to people, which is exactly what I did. And it was a terrific service opportunity. And what it did is my AA world started to grow. And I went to several more of those big book study and actions because I didn't trust myself as a sponsor, but I knew some guys who wanted me to be sponsor. And I said, well, come with me here. I'll share with you my experience by going with you. And I went through several more of those. And I got and my sponsor's sponsor was the next change I needed to make. And he was one of those people on that panel. And Dick said, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. And I said, you know, and in addition to that, if you ever need help on something, let me know. I'm willing to do that. And pretty soon he's tapping me on the shoulder and we're starting. He said, I think you ought to be on the panel and start doing this big book study in action. And I said, well, that would be fine. You're going to be there, right? I'll follow your lead. And that was great fun. But one of the things that he encouraged me to do over and over and over again is he said, Bucky, you need to take this book and you need to sit down at your own dining room table with one guy or two guys and go through this book yourself. You're qualified. And I took a deep breath and I tried that. Young guy by the name of Chad. And it was a special experience for both of us. Every time I go through this book, I don't know how they do it, but they rewrite certain parts of it, I swear. Different parts of it come out in bold print. They get italicized differently. Somehow, every time, there's something new in here for both of us. That's the magic of working with a big book. Chad didn't stick around. He met her and he disappeared. And that was sad. But there were going to be more Chads along the way. And we kept going. And then my sponsor got involved with the DWI court in Hennepin County, which is Minneapolis, in Minnesota. And we offered our services in doing the big book study for the DWI court as part of their program. We're a small part of an 18-month program, but for 15 weeks, we go through the big book just like all of us had done on Sunday nights in church. Here we are in the courtroom at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday. I'm sitting there, my God, how did I get here? But it was also God's way of saying, Bucky, you don't have the discipline you need. I'll help you. Your sponsor is on the, you're on the way for your sponsor to get to this commitment. He'll pick you up. And every Thursday morning, I get picked up. We talk as we go to the DWI court. We do our deal. And we talk as we go home. I said, thank you, God. You know. And so when we have gaps in that schedule, now I miss it. Special relationships come out of all of that. The DWI court has been just an incredible blessing because of, I suspect it's God's way of telling you, Bucky, this is all waiting for you if you don't expand your spiritual life. Your misery will be cheerfully refunded. I also met her in Alcoholics Anonymous. My story's a little different than Jimmy's. I got to marry somebody who was every bit as committed to Alcoholics Anonymous and sobriety as I am. And that's been a special gift. She's here for the convention with us, and we share a journey. And the Big Book is the center of sponsorship for both of us. You're absolutely right, Jimmy. It's not the answer, it's the map. But the destination is terrific, and I thank you all for sharing that with us. Thank you.
I know there's a cynic out there. Yes, I do have a Big Book. There may be some people here who sobered up some time ago, and there are people struggling with this spiritual experience that's being talked about that's in the book. There are a series of them, and I'd like to share with you my first real serious spiritual experience, and it took me a long time to realize it. Newcomers, where I came from, the first step was get in the car. And the newcomer sat on the hump. For those of you who are old enough to remember that kind of a car. So the first real spiritual experience I had was moving off the hump. And getting the window. Unfortunately, it was the window behind the suicide seat. So anyway, that's enough out of me. I would like to say that the topic is our shared experience. One thing I'd like to share with you, those of you who may not know it, but I happen to be privileged to be at the conference when we dealt with the fourth edition of the Big Book, and we snuck some instructions in the back that some people may not have found yet, called the concepts, to make it our perfect, to make it our basic text. But the it's hard to describe, but April 25th, 2001, 8:35 p.m., you could hear a pin drop in the room. This was right after the Literature Committee recommended the approval of the fourth edition Big Book. There were a couple of people who tried to get to the microphone to say some things, and really just flubbed, and just a long pause, and we went to a vote. And the vote was 127-4 in favor of the Big Book. And the thing that we talk about, the midnight book editor that comes in and writes the new stuff in, we put that in there too. But the thing that I think that people can go away with is this was the first edition that the groups of AA had a say in what went into this book. It wasn't the Trustees Literature Committee, it wasn't Bill, it was you guys. The groups of AA had a say. I just happened to be one of the 93 people that represented you, but it was for me, it's an everlasting privilege. So what I'd like to do now is introduce last but not least, certainly, Ron G. from Georgia, who's part of the Communications Committee. I want to know more about this. We don't have that. We use the old tin can and string at home. But his sobriety date is June 14th, 1986. Ron?
My name is Ron, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ron.
It's an honor and privilege to take part in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Mine, unfortunately, is scripted, and maybe fortunately is scripted, because they don't trust me to operate off of how I think. I have you got my sobriety date, and through God's grace and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've hadn't had a drink since that date. One of the things I've picked up is from listening to the two other speakers is that we get here in a variety of ways. We get sober in a variety of ways. We learn to live sober in a variety of ways. What you hear is a little bit different. It's because I needed lots of things to identify with. I needed lots of paths to identify with because I had a real problem understanding that I belonged here. I'm going to welcome you to Atlanta. If you've seen all those green shirts, shake their hands. A lot of people have put in a lot of work from the area standpoint. And tell them that you thank them for their service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a periodic drinker. I didn't drink every day. I thought about alcohol every day, but I did not drink every day. I would sometimes go weeks and months between drinks. I was, I think, intuitively afraid of what would happen if I acted on that thought, because it was what always happened when I took a drink. I would run out of money. The bars would close. See, this was Georgia, and the bars do close. And the bars would close. The blue light would appear behind the car. Something would interrupt my journey. Something would intervene. I thought about alcohol but didn't drink. I was using my primary coping skill in life, willpower. I had a very strong amount of willpower. It took a lot of willpower not to drink for weeks and months, especially when you thought about alcohol every day. I drank for more than 20 years. In the last years of that drinking, though, something changed. Alcohol became very unpredictable in coping with all those things that were going on inside of me that it seemed to provide a solution for after they built up over those weeks and months. But increasingly, I could not reach oblivion like I used to, no matter how much I consumed. Fortunately, drinking this way got me in front of people who pointed me in the direction of Alcoholics Anonymous. Wives, psychologists, psychiatrists, attorneys, judges, priests, policemen, one could add to the list. But unfortunately, I had a closed mind. I only heard differences, never similarities. I think that's partly why we hear so many different paths here. I could not or would not identify with your problem. And if I couldn't identify with your problem, I certainly couldn't identify with your solution. But over a 10-year period of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous over and over and over again, the delusion that I was a normal drinker was very strong. At one time, I stayed for more than a year, but to refuse to do what you did. As long as I did not drink, I did not get drunk. But eventually, I pushed aside your solution to the problem of the alcoholic, living with sobriety. The pain of being sober eventually overcame my willpower not to drink. And I drank again, over and over and over again. Somewhere along the way, your efforts to plant the seeds of recovery began to work. I found myself in a church. See, I was searching for something. The other speakers have talked about their spiritual path. This is part of my spiritual path. I was in that church, and the people in that church seemed to have something going for them. They talked about having the same problems I did, the same internal conflicts and the emotions going on in the inside, facing life day in and day out, but they seemed to be able to enjoy life with all the stuff that was going on inside. I brought out my willpower and mimicked what they did. I tried to get what they had by doing what they did. It was an Episcopal church. If you were an Episcopalian or a Catholic, you know sort of what that's all about. You jumped up a lot, you crossed yourself, you genuflected, you did all those sorts of things. But I couldn't get what they had. Along the way, I found myself sobering up in the basement of that church. See, they gave me a key. They trusted me. I'm not sure why, because I didn't trust me a whole lot. They trusted me. And I started attending meetings this time. Something was different. I had a willingness to listen and take direction as only one who has faced pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. The words of the book. I was desperate. Today I'm very grateful for being desperate. When I came in contact with that AA group, they believed in what was outlined in the book. They believed it was a program of recovery outlined in that book, the map. How to get from where I was to a way I did not have to drink ever again. They talked about their recovery. They lived it in their lives, which was very important because I got to see that day in and day out. You see, I saw in them the same things that we saw in those people in that church. A connection. A spiritual connection for me early on. I made a beginning. I started to attend daily meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I began to read that book. I got a sponsor. I had a discussion about with that sponsor about willpower. See, it was a big part of my life. It's how I dealt with just about everything that went on. And I said, willpower didn't work on drinking. Finally, the light bulb went off. And he said, normal drinkers don't use willpower to stay sober. Another light bulb went off. You see, in the book, there's this wonderful line that says, that someday, somehow, he can enjoy and control his obsession with the thought of every abnormal drinker. Guess what? I was an abnormal drinker. He asked me how my drinking bouts ended. Was I ever successful in drinking? And I thought back on that, and there was a time, but not in the last days. There was not any success, especially after appearing with you the first time. I experienced some immediate relief, but within a matter of weeks being separated from alcohol, I began to experience what y'all call restless, irritable, and discontented. You see, I don't not drink well. That stuff on the inside comes back. Those were the same feelings I had when I used willpower not to drink. Another connection. You told me this is how an alcoholic gets when he doesn't drink. And that our solution to this is to pick up a drink. And there's a sense, that sense of ease and comfort that Silkworth talked about, that eliminates that. Another connection to how I drank. At this point, I was directed to there was a solution because, see, I had the problem. But it didn't have the other part. And there I learned that the main problem centered in my mind. Because it was how I thought. This willpower thing, you think a lot. And I know you don't have to have willpower to think a lot, but I thought a lot. Still do. Being here with you for the day before this, I thought a lot. You see, I have an obsession of the mind. Wish alcohol was the only thing that worked, that occurred in, but it's not. But that's probably good too. Now I was sober. I wanted to be sober, but I was restless, irritable, and discontented. My anger was coming out. It was being taken out on the walls, the doors, the hinges, but more importantly, the family members who got to see how angry I really was on the inside. I had a daughter who told me, I liked you better drunk. Because I was, that didn't come out when I drank. I did not want to drink, but I didn't know how to cope with those emotions. I sat down with that sponsor, and what he told me, what we talked about, changed the course of my life. He asked, was I willing to trust Alcoholics Anonymous learning how to live sober? He asked, was I ready to make a decision about using Alcoholics Anonymous to live sober? You know, we read that in every meeting. A, I'm alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. But we stop a sentence too soon. Being convinced, you are at step three. Of what was I convinced? I finally got convinced of those A's, B's, and C's. I finally was convinced that I belonged here. I was convinced that you all had a solution. Wasn't quite a God yet, but you had a solution. Yeah, I said when I got to that point that there was a demonstration of whether I'd actually perform that decision. I would find myself with a piece of paper and a pen sitting down writing out an inventory. I found myself, because I was desperate sober. You've heard that from probably each of us. I got to the point of being desperate sober. It's a very important point for me, because that was the point that I sort of stopped at before. I never got to the point of desperation and acting on the desperation to do something about it other than go back and drink. This time, I did something different. Found myself sitting with that pen and paper. I did what it said. Learned something of the patterns of my life, the selfishness, the dishonesty, the resentment and fear that ran throughout. After that was done, I looked at those first five proposition. Was I finding no omissions in that? I got to experience that little thing that said at the end of that step. There was an arch. I could step through the arch now, a free man. You all invited me through the arch to be a free man. I progressed through the process. I got to see my peculiar twist of character still in action. Sometimes they place me in collision with those around me. Family, friends, workmates, add to the list. Began to make amends. That helped. Got to clean up some of the wreckage of my past. But more importantly, I think, the relationship with the God of my understanding began to progress and grow. See, I had one deep-seated resentment that I hung on to and hung on to and hung on to. He finally directed me to a place in the book after I was miserable, desperate, about that. You see, we have even a place in the book for that. Sometimes we hide it. We don't read the stories in the back. But the stories have made an impression on my life, both the ones in the first 164 pages and the ones in the back of the book. He directed me, and you all who know this, to freedom from bondage. You see, there I was given a prescription on how to deal with that resentment. It's very simple. To think about the person I resented and pray. And if I prayed, I would be free. Pray that he receive everything in his life that I wanted in mine. And if I did that, I would be free. Pray that receive health, prosperity, happiness. And if I did that, he would be free. For 30 days, I wasn't sure that was going to happen, but it did. I followed the directions. Wasn't used to doing that really very well. I then was directed to deal with my discipline. With that wonderful steps that are at the end of the steps 10 and 11 and then 12. The end of 11 ends with that wonderful statement about we alcoholics are undisciplined. We let God discipline us in this simple way. Well, I followed the directions again. I began to do those things. You told me how to end my day, how to start my day, what to do if I was angry and I was upset, to pause. I began to feel that I could help some other people. I began to feel love and tolerance to others, not something that came naturally. There's another story in the back of the book that's been important to me, and I'll close with it, just one quote out of it. In return for a bottle and a hangover, I've been given the keys of the kingdom. I want to thank you all for sharing your gift of sobriety with me.